dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC basketball fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, coming to you with part two of our basketball preview show. Earlier in the week, Jeremy Ward and myself did part one on the girls' side. Yeah, you can still see that right there on the website. There's multiple links. Go back, take about 35 minutes or so, and get caught up on the girls' league and then now get comfortable and let Jeremy Ward and myself talk a little boys basketball here in the Cider Valley Conference. So, Jeremy, as I welcome you here to part two as we talk boys basketball, I'll kind of start it the same way I did our girls show. I'll talk a variety of fan feedback. Again, a mixed bag here a little bit. One says really excited about the boys league, should be fun. Another interesting one talks about how they can't remember another year where off-season movement roster changes have or will impact the league so much. I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. Even with an obvious favorite, I think the league is really going to be good, someone else said. So when I think of opening thoughts, headlines, discussion, I thought what I'd do is I'd put together my fair statement. If I was going to summarize the league, Jeremy, I would probably say that Uniota has a few weaknesses here and there, but without a doubt has to be a heavy favorite. The guard play in the league is really, really good, probably as good as it's been in a while. And I think what it's going to do, maybe give some coaches an opportunity to do a variety of things, which should make for some pretty good basketball. It should give you a lot of good parity because I think guard play is the base of upsets and so forth. And I think hopefully maybe for a better postseason run in recent history. So
right.
when you take all of that in and maybe you start thinking SVC boys basketball, maybe some of your thoughts here in our opening.
Well, I think those are some great headlines, and you know, we have intelligent listeners, followers, and you know, we want them to drive to the discussion, and you know, some of those are the thoughts. Those are the things that you and I have talked about. Those are the things that you and I have been approached about throughout the preseason and the summertime. So I'm really excited, and you know how we all are, you know, kind of guard partial. I'm sure we'll spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the importance of perimeter play. And that's certainly, you know, one of the focal points of most of the teams in the league this year.
Well, fans, I'll tell you what, next up, Jeremy and I will start right in on it. We'll start putting teams in order. It certainly doesn't take John Wooden to figure out where to start, but it is interesting after that in terms of getting people to agree on 2 through 6. Well, Jeremy, you certainly know Bruce has his A game in the bump music when coming out of the break. Instead of talking Uniota, I wanted to almost jump in and start singing along there. Maybe not to the point of Chris Heldridge, but you know, nonetheless,
right.
has me in engaged a little bit.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, like the 84 Cubs all over again.
Well, I tell you what, in terms of where we're going to start, obviously, as I said there, leading in, it doesn't take a genius to figure out on paper, and let's face it, that's where predictions come from, is on paper. The Uniota team's really, really good. It starts with Nick Corcoran, player of the year a year ago, averaged 17 a game, approached almost 73-pointer, shoots at close to 80% from the free throw line. Really just good shooter of the basketball. Eric Hosley, just an incredible athlete. Can do a variety of things on both ends. Nick Overley's a dynamite point guard. You have great length on the perimeter with a Cottrell or Atkins, or Coach Hoops can go with a lot of quickness and strength, and a Kyle Strange. Lovely, Swackhammer, Edler, Thomas, Hauser, they'll eventually get an Isaac Wheeler. I mean, there's just the list goes on and on. I had someone joking with me a little bit talking about how it was a Kentucky-like roster where he could have his purple and gold platoon running back and forth. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of quickness, size, Jeremy. There's a lot of talent. But I think with Coach Hoops, here's, you know, we could sit and talk all day about their strengths because the list is long. But I want to talk to you a little bit about some of their challenges in terms of them dominating this league the way a lot of people think they're going to. Coach Hoops getting the buy-in. Anytime you have a long list of kids that can play, you know, how's the minutes going to be divided up? How are the shots going to be divided up? Can they play together? How are they going to react to being challenged a little bit? Because they're going to take everybody's best shot. And I'll tell you, that kind of happened in the preview the other night. Preview or not, I was very impressed how Huntington kind of came out. And Uniota kind of punched him in the mouth, and Huntington kind of punched right back and played. And I know Coach Hoops well enough, preview or not, he can't be very happy giving up 46 in two quarters of basketball. So I think that was a great learning curve just there in the preview, even for these guys to understand, hey, you're going to get everybody's best shot every night out, particularly on the road. You better bring it and you better play. So is that kind of the biggest challenge ahead for Coach Hoops, or do you see something within the game of basketball that's more of a challenge? Just your thoughts on the Uniota as they enter the season with expectations sky high.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the challenges are mental. You know, are you going to be able to keep yourself, zoned in? Are you going to have the focus to understand that, you know, everybody's gunning for you? I mean, those kids know by now that, Uniota is not going to be well loved as they go to opposing gyms. So, they're going to get. They're going to get some intensity from the play of their opponent, but they're going to get some of that animosity in the stands, and I think they're going to gather in large numbers. I look for the crowds to be, you know, really strong this year. I look for the fan involvement to be really strong this year, just to create an environment. So, you know, Union is going to be playing in that electricity night in and night out, and you're going to have to be able to step up and take that and almost play with the chip on your shoulder that, you know, hey, everybody's coming to get you. Are you willing to, step up there and take it?
You know, Jeremy, on the Uniota side of things, we mentioned on our girls' show with Alexis Overly, Uniota had the clean sweep in Player of the Years. I noticed on the Huntington side, they had the clean sweep, if you will, in terms of scoring titles. We mentioned Ariel Sams on our girls' show. Now I get to Huntington here, Elijah Shanks. And the reason we're going to Huntington here, with Uniota in the one spot, Huntington 7, Westfall 8 was basically what I was consistently getting from the fans as it comes in. So those seem to be the three spots, Jeremy, that everybody's agreeing on. So Uniota in this one spot. Now we look at Huntington and Westfall, and obviously with Huntington, led by Elijah Shanks at 17.4 points per game a year ago, and he shot it at 60% from the field. And I remember something you said a year ago on our preview show about how you're so impressed with his efficiency and so forth. And I got to thinking about that as I watched him in a scrimmage. I watched him a little bit in the preview. I think in his role this year, there's probably going to have to be a little bit more aggressiveness on the offensive end. Maybe that'll see a drop in the field goal percentage, but I think it's going to see a rise in the ways that Elijah can score. And he's still filling out the three-point shot a little bit. Filling out maybe a way to attack the bigger as he draws the bigger defender out with some of his quickness. And I think that'll be an interesting dynamic there. David Shoemaker's another kid that returns. We know how athletic he is from the football field. And then there's a group of sophomores that Coach Kell is going to really, really ask to grow up in a hurry. The Vining kid was DeAndre Vining was really, really good at the preview the other night. That was an incredible atmosphere. Like I said, preview or not, he comes out, scores Huntington's first 9 points, I think it was. Levi Nelson, Brian Smith, those are some kids that made some plays. And then you get some bigger, older kids that bring some strength to the practice floor as well to the depth of Coach Kello with Barker and Doyle and Fraley. So I think Huntington's a dangerous team at home. They're going to go through some growing pains. This team reminds me a little bit when I was a really young coach with a Drew Bob and a really young nucleus around him, you know, having Elijah Shanks, that type of player. This is going to be a team that I think because they're so well coached, because they have a great player, I think that they're going to hang in third quarter. Depth could be an issue a little bit, and it'll be maybe interesting as they get late third quarter, fourth quarter to see how many times they can stick their nose in, Jeremy, and get over the hump. What are some of the keys in your mind for Huntington?
Well, you know, I think it comes back. You know, you talk about Elijah's efficiency, and yeah, maybe he's going to have to come out of his comfort zone a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to stick with who you are and do what you do best, so to speak. And I think maybe the efficiency maybe comes into play for the rest of the team. You know, they're not going to be able to make very many mistakes if they're going to compete with some of the teams that are a little more athletic or have a little more depth. So, you know, they're not going to be able to get in foul trouble. They're not going to be able to turn the basketball over, and they're certainly not going to be able to get out rebound. And that's the one thing when you have a team that has some athletes that's well coached and has a player to kind of anchor in Elijah Shanks, you know, those are some pretty good ingredients. And we're talking about a team that people were picking to finish seventh or eighth.
Right.
I think there's a lot of variables there that would make you to believe. And, you know, again, preview or not, you know, the players that are playing, you know, if that's one of your weaker teams, then I think it's going to speak volumes to the strength of this league top to bottom.
Well, no question. And when you move to Westfall in the 8-hole, I mean, I was just making the comment the other night about how much better I thought they looked. And a lot of them being picked 8th goes to the strength of the league and just how good the 7 teams ahead of them are. But I'm a big guy that believes it always starts with guard play. And you like so many teams in the league with Wyman and Mink back and then Chase Anderson coming back. This is a group that just kind of physically looked a year older to me. I thought they had a little bit more physicality to them off the dribble. I watched them on the defensive end. Now, this particular group did not play a lot of minutes for Westfall the other night in the preview. But nonetheless, I could see enough just in their warmups and a couple of defensive possessions where I felt like I was just impressed with their year's growth. And this is a group that really can shoot it at the free throw line. So we're going to talk a little bit about officiating later and some differences there. Is that maybe a way that these guys can control tempo and get some things? So obviously there's going to have to be some production from the front line with some size, or with Dylan Anderson graduating and so forth. But definitely a year better. It is a tough league, more competitive, perhaps doesn't mean more wins, but maybe patience is a key word for Westfall. This is still a pretty young basketball team.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, you don't forget about some of that maturity coming. You know, it's difficult to play both sides of the floor. And I think, you know, you can talk all you want about finding ways to score and creating shots and things like that. And more than likely, they're going to be better at that end. But you're also going to have to be able to defend some really good athletes and then still be able to play offense. And I think that's the challenge in that learning curve and that developmental stage is, you know, you can't conserve your energy on defense or you're going to be playing from behind, you know, night in and night out. And Westfall's not going to be a team that's going to be able to do that. You're not going to be able to play behind and have a lot of success. So they're really going to have to, you know, show the intensity on the defensive end, get some stops early in the games, really game plan well and execute, you know, and control those possessions so that they can, you know, stick their nose in the fourth quarter and maybe knock off a few teams ahead of them.
Well, Jeremy, I tell you what, really good stuff. You know, those seem to be the three teams with Uniota 1, Huntington 7, Westfall 8, where most of the fans seem to be on the same page. But in the middle is where the craziness comes from. So let's see if we can make some sense out of all of this next.
Whoa! Yeah! On the sunset, feels in my mindset. I keep another getting high, higher than my income. Income's of breadcrumbs. I've been trying to survive. The glow that the sun gets right around sunset helps me realize that this is just a journey. Drop your worries. You are gonna turn out fine. Oh, you turn out fine.
Well, another nice selection from Brewster. I understand that's a little bit of a DBK media service, maybe special there. Enjoyed that a little bit, Jeremy.
Yeah, we have a little local talent from Miami University. I like it.
Yeah, nice. I tell you what, let's get into the rest of the league here. We mentioned that the 1-7-8 seemed to be not a whole lot of argument in terms of on paper, but boy, when you get to 2-6, will you get some heavy basketball debate going, and I certainly enjoy that. So let's start talking. We'll go in alphabetical order, similar to the way we did on the girls' side here, since no one can agree. Let's start with the Edina Warriors. Obviously, you start with Jonathan Thomas. Really, really talented kid, nice strong guard. I know he's done a lot of his work with the ball in his hands over the last couple of years. Now it looks like he's going to get off the ball a little bit more as the Corey kid really starting to develop as a ball handler. And I'll tell you what, Jeremy, when Thomas gets off the ball, he's catching it more on the three-point line with that live dribble still being saved. So he's not only a deadly three-point shooter, but with him playing up on the three-point line, boy, can he put the ball on the floor, and within one or two dribbles really cause some defense some serious problems in terms of him getting into the teeth of the defense. So that'll be something interesting. And then you throw in Hunter Miller. He was a double-digit scorer a year ago. Isaac Thomas, Wyatt Shannon, give him a little bit of strength down low. You know, this is a Dina team that's not huge, but almost every single one of those kids, particularly with the Thomases and Miller and Shannon, they seem to play just a little bit taller than they are, which I think really is where they maybe have improved a little bit on the defensive end. So I think Coach Smith seemed real upbeat. When I talked to him the other night, I had a nice conversation with him, 5-10 minutes. He's really excited about the mix of the old and the young kids. So with the group he's going to start the year with here, seems to be really excited. Now, obviously, he's going to get Brian Hall, a top five talent in our league, back after 11 games. I tell you, what a factor. I was looking at the schedule, Jeremy. I think the first 11 games only have five league games in it. So if this is a Dina team that 4-1, 3-2, boy, could they be a factor in this thing. Now, if they fall to a 2-3, 1-4, maybe a little bit more of a tough road. But I think they only have one non-league game after Hall will return to the lineup. So this could be a really, really dangerous basketball team come January, could it not?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. You know, already going to be much improved just with the physicality and the maturity and the experience that you know, they bring back. But when you throw another game changer type like a Brian Hall, you know, it really increases I suppose the headaches for the opposing defenses. And you know, maybe Adina has been so good at being able to play with in system and have scouting reports, and these kids have had to learn, you know, how picky you have to be, how little room for error there is, and if they can still do that now that they're a little more mature, now that they're a little more physically gifted, they could be extremely good, you know, and then you throw in Hall halfway through. You certainly, they're going to have an impact on the league. One way or another, they're going to have an impact.
You know, when you talk about sleepers and you talk about teams really looking to make a jump, I guess Edina kind of partners up with Paint Valley in that particular discussion, or at least that's how it's come across to me from talking to a lot of basketball throughout the Side of Valley Conference. And, you know, when I look at Paint Valley, I look at it a couple different ways. Obviously, with the McCloy kid, you know, Mason's just a kid with a really high motor, 17 points, 15 rebounds last year per game. And just he's just relentless to the offensive glass. Thought he really wiped the defensive glass nicely the other night in the preview. Keep in mind, he and Anthony McFadden just and Clay Archer just coming in off the football field, only been in the gym about a week here. So you take Clay Stratton, who I think is really one of the underappreciated kids in our league over the last couple of years. You know, keep in mind this. Obviously, people know I love Anthony McFadden to death, very biased to him as I'm his baseball coach. But, you know, Anthony's a kid that didn't even play basketball in the eighth grade. So when he came in, his sophomore year, his freshman year and about half his sophomore year, Stratton was forced to still jump back there and help with a lot of the ball handling. And, you know, I talked a little bit about that on the girls' show, as kids are forced to handle the ball a little bit more and distribute and do some things. You know, but this Stratton kid, here's a kid that's only about 130 points shy of 1,000. He can really score the basketball. He can create for others. And when you look at the way Anthony had started to come on last year in the postseason, Jeremy, now you have a backcourt that was averaging right around 28 to 30 points a game. You throw in what McCloy can do, and then now you obviously get the great size of Dylan Swingle. who kind of shows the ability to face up at the, you know, 6'8", 6'9", shoot the 15 footer, still kind of filling his game out a little bit with his back to the basket, but obviously can change shots, can rebound it. And then physicality of Clay Archer. I know Tim Gray comes off the bench. Trevor Medley, Adam Bells might even be something Coach Shoemaker's looking to try his best to develop a seventh and eighth in terms of the depth chart. But obviously going to be better in the league. I've seen some Division IV teams early in the preseason here, and I love the matchups for Paint Valley, which I think can really lead to a special tournament run if we were to look on down the road. Just obviously a lot of optimism in Bainbridge here. Your thoughts on the Bearcats?
Well, again, it comes back to experience and that perimeter strength. And you go from, you know, all the growth I think they showed last year and the success in the postseason. I think that will give them the patience that they need, because, you know, you're not going to be hitting all, you know, on all cylinders probably even before Christmas. So, you know, you're really looking at, you know, let's take our time. Let's not get too greedy. Depth is a concern, and you don't want to wear your big guns out. So you're going to have to just kind of make yourself play a few extra kids and get them a few extra minutes off so that you're not, beating on their bodies. And I think you'll see, you know, come January, this is a team that again will start to click. We'll probably be a lot more efficient on the offensive end and shooting the basketball. And they're again, they're going to be dangerous. And I think they're going to be able to play with the bigger schools this year, where last year, you know, there was that big drop off. You know, they could compete with some of the smaller schools, but they really couldn't get over the hump and compete with the big boys. And I think certainly this year, come first of the year, that you'll see that they're pretty versatile, and I will not be surprised at all if they knock off, you know, a Zane Trace, a Southeastern, a Uniota, teams that they've struggled with in the past.
Well, you know, the biggest thing I think that's going to help Dylan Swingle's development is the presence of Mason McCloy. I mean, Mason has such an incredible motor on the glass and his trips up and down the floor. So I think that's something to watch for. And I guess the guard version of that, Jeremy, would take me to Piketon. The same way I'm talking about Mason's motor that he plays with down low. You know, Wyatt Brewster is a guard that plays with a great motor. And you don't always say that about a guard, but the word I just keep coming back to when I think of Wyatt is just relentless. This is a kid that averaged 17 points, 8 rebounds from the guard spot a year ago, 3 assists. And he's just the reason I say relentless is he just puts so much pressure on the defense and on the officials, because he's just he just continues to attack the middle. He continues to attack the glass. He can certainly shoot it. He's a very creative shot taker and maker, if you will, because he's a kid that at times will look to be forcing, but I think it's more about him just staying aggressive. He's surrounded by a nice supporting cast. I know Zach Jordan a year ago was a double digit scorer, one of the league's top 3-point shooters and free throw shooters. The Beach kid's back with some nice length. The Moore kid looked a year older at the preview the other night. I thought he looked really good. And then they have some size and athleticism in terms of Southworth Volgamore. Coach Brabson's kind of using to maybe stretch that middle out a little bit more, which kind of gives the guards some extra spacing to play with. So for whatever reason, Piketon, along with Southeastern, who we'll talk about, for whatever reason, Jeremy, they're flying under the radar. And that's crazy dangerous, in my opinion.
Yeah, when you have that much scoring back, that much experience back, and you play as hard as they do, and you look at it, they haven't really had to change their formula. If you think about it, they can still do the same things that they did 2, 3, 4 years ago. Now, do they have the talent that they had during their title runs? Well, you know, probably not. But you know,
Sure.
When you can play in the same fashion, and it's not like that, you know, Brabson took over and they put in a whole new system. They didn't do that. So, you know, they still have that freedom to get out and play, create a lot of havoc, the ability to get to the glass. And, you know, and again, I generally think your coaches and your best players, the rest of the team kind of takes on the personality of that. And when you play with the kind of passion, that, that Brewster does, I just think that's contagious, and you get other kids that, you know, are going to do the same thing, and that's kind of been the MO of Piketon as their guards have kind of handed the reins to the next guy in line. So Piketon's very dangerous. I was able probably to see them more in the summer than anybody else, and you know, they can score the basketball in different ways. They can create a lot of havoc, and you know, man, I tell you what, I don't think anybody's going to go into Piketon thinking this is a freebie.
Well, speaking of flying under the radar, I guess Southeastern falls in the same thing. I mean, I've been trying to tell people, let's not feel too sorry for Coach Cox. I mean, he has an experienced backcourt back. Feels like Dylan Miles has been running the point for like 15 years there. And I mean, I love his game so quick. The thing he's added to his game, Jeremy, is he's learned how to play with a change of pace. You know, when he was younger, it was just 1,000 miles per hour all the time, where now he understands that, hey, I can kind of knock it down 75-80%. I'm still the fastest kid out here, and then I can really go to another gear when Coach Cox needs me to push the tempo and go. And you know, he has experience with him now in the backcourt because Justin Dye's a year older. The Cartier kid is I could just sit and watch him shoot the basketball all night. It's so pure. The lefty stroke, three-point shooter, free throw shooter. Really is adding some things in his mid-range game. This kid can really, really play. So again, Coach Cox has great backcourt in terms of experience and talent. And then, you know, you hear so much about the front line, kind of getting hit by graduation or whatever, but make no excuse about it. This team has some nice athletes on the front line. Terrell Farrow, Cone, Lawson, Benson. I mean, anytime you start watching kids fill the break and like going up trying to, you know, dunk in the preview and stuff, you could see like the entire gym, Jeremy, like looking down at their roster, like who's that, you know? So it's kind of a thing, you know. You throw in a Hunter Miles and Isaiah Dresbach, some nice IQ, some effort, high energy guys that Coach Cox really likes to coach that way on the defensive end. So. I know I made the comment watching freshman JV last year that they had some talent coming up. I think as Coach Cox gets it all sorted out and he has a senior point guard, if he can get the Miles kid to really buy into what he's selling and Coach kind of Miles become the Coach Miles on the court, if you will, for Coach Cox, this is a group that is really, really capable of making some noise. Would you agree?
You know, I would, and I think that's a good point. You know, anytime you have a point guard that's kind of bridges the gap of one regime to the next, it puts a lot of pressure on a kid. And you know, you kind of have to think about how everybody else maybe, you know, took you under the wing when you were the young guy playing with these older guys, or maybe some of the hardships or some of the, you know, difficulties you had being the young guy playing with those old guys. But when it flips and now you're the older guy and you're, you know, the veteran, and you've got to break in the new system, and you kind of become the extension of the coach and that teacher on the court of those other kids. It's always interesting how players, you know, kind of react to that change. And, you know, you get to be a senior, you got a lot of other things in your mind. So it's certainly a challenge. But you know, usually see one of two things. You know, you kind of get stuck, and if things don't go well early, you kind of have to watch out because one loss turns into three. But my goodness, the flip side of that is, you know, Dylan Miles could be the difference maker in, you know, making Southeastern very quickly coming out of the shadows and, you know, getting everybody's attention back, because I think that's a very talented roster.
Yeah, you know, Jeremy, one reason perhaps Piketon and Southeastern have done this is here's kind of the conversation, how it goes on the boys' side. Someone will walk up to me and they'll say, hey, Unioto's going to be really good, aren't they? You know, and Huntington Westfall probably down toward the bottom. Yeah, yeah. Hey, what's going on over there, Zane Trace? That's kind of a crazy situation, isn't it? And they kind of skip straight ahead and get to Edina Paint Valley being a kind of a sleeper. And I think maybe that's where Piketon and Southeastern get skipped over a little bit. So Zane Trace is kind of an interesting discussion. You know, I get a lot of emails into the website saying, hey, are you going to talk a little bit about this, or you need to talk about the Zane Trace situation? And I'll be real honest, by no means are we against talking about anything. We've talked about administrative decisions and coaching decisions and principal decisions on here and other things. but we've never really had any concrete questions or comments come about. So I guess when it comes to, you know, we've always said, at the high school level, we're going to pick and choose what we talk about. But in this particular case, there's obviously been a coaching change. It's a coaching change from Coach Allen out of Coach Coker. I'm very familiar with both, have a high level respect for both. So at the end of the day, it kind of returns to the basketball court. And I guess I look at, the roster looks a lot different than we thought it would if you were to ask us a year ago today. But nonetheless, Pierce Mowry, in my opinion, the league's top player a year ago. But obviously, that's up for debate. You have 5-6 kids average right around 17 points a game, and they're all back. But he's a kid that can really shoot it from deep, can really shoot it at the free throw line. And I think he's going to start to show maybe a variety to score in some other ways. This is a team that basically is now without about 3/4 of their offense, rebounding and assists from a year ago when I check out the stat sheet. But nonetheless, it's kind of a tough matchup and going to really go. I know Trey Rittenhouse, Christian Boltonhouse, those are some kids that have contributed to varsity level. Wolf Nesser, Peyton Hills, a 6'4 freshman, comes in. So a depth of athlete as Coach Coker starts to go. And I guess it is kind of a unique situation because it'll be interesting to see how the depth of athletes fit into the new system here. But obviously, with a kid like Mowry on the court, you certainly always have a chance there on the offensive end, Jeremy. Maybe something that jumps out at you as a key that maybe is going to dictate how quickly Zane Trace is able to stick their nose in more of a top half of the league spot compared to maybe dropping to a bottom half.
Well, you have that many kids that are inexperienced in a league that has all kinds of experience, especially at the guard spot. You don't get a chance to sit back and watch. You better be prepared. And I think having some veteran presence, obviously with Mowry, it's going to take some pressure off the other kids to get better. However, I just don't know, where the breaks are in the schedule, and their sure. non-league's always very good. So I think it's a learn by fire. But I certainly don't think that the kids or the fans or the coaching staff at Zane Trace is going to expect anybody to feel sorry for them. I think they're going to play with a chip on their shoulder. I think they're going to understand that. Varsity basketball is varsity basketball, and all the stuff that happens outside of the lines and has happened in the past is over, and there's nothing you can do about it. Right now, you gotta get yourself prepared to play a varsity basketball schedule in a very good league. You look around and you say, hey, we've got some talent. We've got the ability to go out and compete. Experienced or not, it's going to be coming at us, and I do. I think the biggest benefit is when you have a talent like Mowry that can score in so many different ways. If he can really, play smart and stay in the game and stay out of foul trouble, I think you're going to see Zane Trace being able to compete with pretty much anybody that they play.
Well, Jeremy, I agree with that. I'll tell you what, let's get to our fast break segment. Fans, this is where Jeremy and I take on 4 rapid fire style questions. And Jeremy, I'm using the same questions from the girl show. And the reason I wanted to do that was I think it does a good job of summarizing the league. Plus, for our listeners that are listening to both shows, I think they can kind of compare the leagues a little bit and compare their answers. And fans, we want you to play along and let us know your thoughts. So, Jeremy, why don't you go first? I will follow. Bruce, let's go ahead with the 4 the same questions from the girls' show so fans can compare and contrast the two sides.
Beyond the obvious answer being talent, what is one X factor that really separates teams in terms of where you think they will finish in the final standings?
Well, with all the talk about the experienced guard play, I really think it comes down to go-to players. You can have all the talent, all the depth in the world, but in critical situations, talent or not, you got to have somebody you can go to that can make those big plays. Whether it's end of quarter situations, end of game situations, I think with all of the talent that's in the league, the biggest X factor is who's going to have their main guy step up in the clutch.
You know, Jeremy, we're pretty close on this. I'm going to give it a different twist, though, with the guard play and talk about more of possessions, shot selection, tempo. You know, what happens with coaches getting involved here when you have great talent at the guard spot and great experience is, depending on the matchup, there might be a night coaches want to go pretty fast. There might be a night where you really want to limit possessions. And so I really think turnovers, rebounding, those types of stats become huge. But boy, can the guards really be an extension of the coach in terms of understanding tempo and shot selection.
What do you consider an overall strength of the league?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. It's perimeter play. But, you know, my take is, you know, with the game-changing talent that we have up and down the rosters, the explosiveness and the scoring from the wing, whether it's, you know, via the three-point shot or penetration, you know, I think part of that is what that creates, and you know that makes the defense concern themselves as the fouls are likely to add up when you have guards who can put the ball on the floor and you know and finish at the glass. It forces adjustments by the opposing coaches, and you know there's just so much that goes with that perimeter play. It's unquestionably the strength of the league.
Well, Jeremy, again, I'll kind of go the same route, but I'll kind of extend off your answer. You know, to me, it's the depth of the guard play. You know, when you're talking about go-to players or you're talking about the elite players, you know, you might think of a Thomas. I'll mention a Corey. You might think of a Stratton. I'll add a McFadden at the point. You know, when you might talk about a Brewster, I'll talk about the different guards of a Jordan and different things. You know, we talked about Cartier. I mentioned Miles. You talk about Corcoran. I talk about Overly. And so if I go on down the list every team, I think it's the depth of guards, and it's going to be that second, third perimeter person to where each team, I think, is going to be able to find a matchup that they like and be able to exploit something off the dribble.
On the other side of this discussion, what do you consider an overall weakness of the league?
Well, what I see is possibly some lack of discipline and patience as far as in the half court and in the scrimmage area. Anytime you have that kind of talent, and you know, when you're going to match the guards head to head and these wing players head to head, you know, you're bound to get a little more one-on-one play or somebody trying to make a great shot or a tough shot instead of just making, you know, the right decision. And you know, it kind of goes back to, you know, Shane's point on the number of possessions and my point with end of game, end of quarter situations. At the end of the day, when you're playing in a talented team, you can't give anything away, and making good decisions and taking what the defense gives you is pretty important.
You know, Jeremy, I'll go true post play. And that's not to say we don't have good post players in the league, because we obviously do. Shanks and McCloy, we've already talked about them leading the way, not to mention some of the kids on down the line like a Hosley. But if you look at a Shanks and you look at McCloy, you look at Hosley, you look at the Southeastern bigs and the Piketon bigs I talked about, they're kids that, because of some of the guard play, maybe are going to be asked to stretch off the block a little bit, to open the middle a little bit more. They're more guys that get it off of the dump on the dribble penetration, or they get it off the offensive glass. So we don't have that true back to the basket where you're always sitting down on the block. Now, maybe you'll see that a little bit more from, say, the Swingle kid or for some of the younger kids coming into the league. But with the current set of bigs that we have and with the guard play that we have, I don't know how much you're going to get established block play with the back to the basket.
For our preview Liar Liar Stripes on Fire, what will be the number one thing the officiating will influence in the league this season?
Well, everybody knows the officials, the biggest thing they influence are losses. I mean, just ask any fan, right? No, just kidding. But, you know, really, I think it's coaching. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, points of emphasis as there is every year, but, you know, the effects on, you know, the defense not being able to contact the ball handler, steer the ball handler, just, you know, that being a focal point this year, is a big thing. But, you know, how coaches adjust to that, you know, how are they going to adjust when they expect it to be called tighter and it's not? How are they going to adjust when, you know, on Friday night it's called tightly and then Saturday, you know, it's a free-for-all? Will the players be prepared to adjust, you know, due to this? Is that something the coaches are going to talk about and prepare their kids for? Or will we see that frustration and the complaining with the players and with the coaching staffs? And I can tell you, you know, the officials should be expected to adjust the flow of the game while keeping these points of emphasis in mind. So I don't think I'm really deflecting this onto the coaches. It's certainly the officials' responsibility as well. But I can tell you, I saw some of the best teams in the area in the preseason and had zero conversations with any of the coaches about how the games are going to be called. And all that I saw in those situations were the coaches talking to their players about how to prepare. And ultimately, that's what you expect to see happen.
I'll tell you what, that's a really interesting answer, Jeremy. That really makes me think a little bit, because I find myself repeating the girls' answer a little bit here in terms of it starts with, for me, the officials' interpretation of the new emphasis. Because when you try to keep the guards out of the middle in this boys' league, you know, good luck, because when you think of kids like Mowry off the dribble, we mentioned Wyman and Mink a year better at Westfall, Miles at Southeastern, Overly at Uniota, Brewster, McFadden, Stratton, Thomas, you know, even the young kids there at Huntington. How in the world, when kids like Overly and Miles decide they're going to get to the middle, are you going to get them out of the middle without getting your hands on? And a stat I looked on our Dean of Sports Medicine SBC stats page from a year ago, 14 of the 15 top free throw shooters in the league are back. And when you think of, it's going to be a more physical type of athletic type of league with a lot of dribble drive, boy, I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on the officials. And it'll just be interesting to see if they follow through with their interpretation and we do get more free throws being shot. Well, fans, Jeremy and I are going to wrap it up here. Let us know your thoughts, Facebook, Twitter. I'm SVC Sports Zone on those social media there. And then in the inbox, of course, is admin1@svcsportszone.com. Love to hear your voice, 740-569-3254. Give us a specific comment, a specific question with a little bit of detail, a little bit of background. Jeremy and I certainly take it into consideration, get it on the show here, and lead to some great discussion. I know we have a great show coming up next week as we talk fair, unfair, a lot of situations with player development, AAU, open gym, off-season, shootouts, camps. Really had some nice topics sent in that we're putting together an entire show on. So if you have any opinions on off-season basketball, AAU, and so forth, let us know your thoughts there. So with that in mind, fans, I'll tell you what, really enjoy the early menu of hoops and make sure to join us next week here on SVC Sports Talk. So until then, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all of our other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people at DBK Media Services, and for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportszone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.